Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective is presented by YouTube TV. Try it free today at youtube.com/NBA23. New users only. Terms apply. Cancel anytime. Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday afternoon or evening. Oh, that's a little hint. Joining us from New York City is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, everybody.
And joining us from Dallas, Texas, is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Still morning here.
It is. It's still morning where I am, too. But where it's evening is our special guest for this. This was supposed to be our Game 6 preview podcast, but Nikola Jokic got it done with the Nuggets in 5 games. So over to Belgrade, Serbia. Joining us, Atlanta Hawks guard and proud Serbian, I would have to say, probably for the last week, Bogdan Bogdanović. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. And hello from Belgrade.
So you haven't been in Belgrade long. I know this because I saw you after game 4 in Miami a few days ago, sitting in the stands with the Jokic family, the Jokic brothers, cheering on your countrymen. Nikola plays on the Serbian national team with you. So what has the experience been of watching him have this amazing moment for all of Serbia?
It's still unreal and still it's unbelievable, you know, that following him since we were teammates. I know him since his almost beginnings, you know, and I met him with our mutual friend at friend's apartment, and we were playing Sony PlayStation and chilling, and he just showed up and he was so quiet, we didn't even think that guy will be NBA champion, very few years later, but it was amazing to be there, you know, to see how, you know, the real process and real support from his family and the whole team. It was good to see the vibes and, you know, where they at mentally, you know, everyone, not just players on the court, but the as you said, brothers and family, and also other players' family. There it looked like they were all together in it, and it's very, very beautiful picture, you know, for sports.
What, I know you've only been back to Belgrade for a few hours, but what's the vibe? Novak Djokovic just became the all-time leader in the when he just won the French Open. So the Serbian stands at the top of the all-time tennis with the most singles Grand Slams, and then Jokic Finals MVP. You know, I know how important sport is in Serbia. What's it like there right now?
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, how important the sport is in Serbia, and sometimes it's a little bit too much, but now it's really beautiful, and our people are very beautiful people, and they follow sports with passion. So sometimes when you lose, you know, that they take that responsibility like they lost, and then they criticize you, you know, and what should you fix, and they giving you advice and all that. But also when you win, you know, they just cheer for you like nobody else. And it was beautiful to, you know, what are the chances for two Serbian people to go out and be able to represent the country that way, and to be in the same moment of, you know, I don't know, it's still surreal and unbelievable, really, what happened a couple of days ago. You know, Sunday, Novak win, and then Monday, another Joker wins. So it was unbelievable, and you can see the happiness a little bit in the people, and proudness and respect. I feel like everybody, especially the basketball fans in Serbia, they were waiting for that moment for years. You know, when I came to Sacramento, I was telling everyone, they don't even know how Sacramento is popular in Serbia because of Vlade and Peja. Right. And everybody was waking up and watching these games, and they were so into it. And, you know, to wait 20 years, and, you know, to believe in a guy like Nikola, and you know, during the tough times as well, you know, they were there to support him, and it's just a beautiful picture.
When you first played against him, what did you think he could become? Like, what, because you were a very highly regarded, you know, your first round draft pick, you were very highly regarded as a teenager. You played for Partizan, I think, when you were 18, Partizan and Red Star being the two just big time rivals. Like, you were a pretty well known guy, but was he well known? And what did you think when you first played with him?
Like everybody else, honestly, like good shooter. Like, he can shoot and he's tall and he can pass. That was like what everybody saw from him at the beginning, you know, and he can pass. Actually, passing was first, but he's tall and he can shoot and he has a nice touch. Let's see what he can do. But the way he's taking control of the game and being so quiet, he's showing you by example, you know, really like how you should be playing the game. And every move, every single second on the floor, he is thinking, you know, he developed that game now, you know, now he's on another level. But even then, he was really working. All these minutes where he plays like 20 minutes, he really plays 20. You know, he's not for 5 minutes like out of his game and he doesn't want to play, or, you know, he's into himself, ego or some stuff. He was never like that. He was always 100% into the game every single minute. And that was the difference that I could, you know, see. But also he opened the path, you know, for a lot of different guys here and from Europe, because trend was, you know, you have to play like for big teams, big clubs to show that you are that type of player, blah, 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 you know. But I like to say with the luck in his career, you know, he didn't play for Partizan or the Red Star at the beginning, and he didn't need to, you know, win at the early stage of his career. Which is sometimes harder for, you know, players at the beginning. And he went different way and he end up somewhere that he wasn't imaginable. You know, you cannot even imagine back then that he will be in NBA. I don't even think he was thinking about it back then.
Well, he was asleep when he got drafted. He was asleep. He had a promise from the Nuggets and he went to bed. Right? Yes. Like that's
true story. That's the true story. And, you know, it's kind of disconnected world, you know, NBA and Serbia, you know, until you have Jokic in NBA, you know.
When did you first start thinking that, you know, he's not just a tall guy who can pass with nice touch? When did you start thinking like, this guy's got a chance to be an NBA superstar type of player?
NBA superstar. When I saw him in NBA, when I played against him in NBA. But before that, I don't even think he was thinking about it, because, you know, obviously he didn't even follow, you know, what was going on in EuroLeague, in NBA, and around him. You know, he was just, okay, let me finish my job, like he said after. Mm-hmm. We are always waiting for us in Serbia now. We are always waiting for his comments after the game now and what he's going to say. And I know he doesn't like it.
So are we.
But, yeah. I feel like he is pretty interesting guy right now to everyone. But we knew this before. We knew, like, he always had this funny quotes and funny comments after the game.
Well, it's sort of been an interesting thing with him, to your point, that people don't really know a lot about him because he hasn't really let them in a lot of the time, right? He is kind of a quiet guy, kind of a private guy. But part of that has also led people to say things like, oh, yeah, he's not worried about accomplishments. He's not worried about stats. But then you see him make comments like he did to Malika Andrews after Game 5 when he said, well, they just didn't believe in the fat guy. And I think it's kind of proof that he's got a lot more competitive fire in him than I think people tend to believe. Is that how you see it? That he actually does really pay attention to what's going on and what people are thinking and wanting to prove people wrong?
I feel like he is not saying nothing that he doesn't believe in. You know, and he really believes in that. And I know it sounds weird, but and like, how does he do it? And, you know, but I feel like NBA is a stage of, you know, freedom for players. And that's where they can fulfill their talents. I believe if he was in Europe and he was talking like that, I don't think he will be as accepted, you know. But he also... you know, he don't talk like this since the beginning. You know, that's, he's just thinking like that. He was thinking about it at the beginning, and then nobody even didn't even talk to him at the beginning because he didn't want it. And they were like, okay, we don't need to, you know. But right. Now when he's like MVP and all these awards, and, you know, now everyone wants to talk to him, and now he doesn't want it. I like it. I mean, that's cool. That's cool. And I think he's right about it. And it's just another guy in the league with his stuff. That's how.
Yeah, I mean, like, so you're from Belgrade. He's from Sombor, which is,
yes.
Is that the country? Like, what do people from Belgrade think
it's another
about
city.
From Sombor?
It's another city in Serbia. It's up north, a couple hours drive from Belgrade. Yeah, every city thinks they are the best city in Serbia. So yeah. that's normal. Everywhere you go to play some basketball, you know, everyone says, no, you didn't go to Novi Sad. No, you didn't go right. to Belgrade streets, or, you know, this and that. So that's normal. But yeah, Sombor, it's different culture. It's like our north, it's part of our north Serbia Vojvodina. And they're all like that, a little bit kind of slow and lazy, but yeah, that's a culture thing from north of Serbia. But they're very funny people. They have jokes, so that's why he's also funny.
That's the thing. People, my friends from Serbia tell me, like, you know, here comes this kid from Sombor, obviously, you know, sort of dumpy looking, and he's like, well, who is this guy? Like people looked at him that way in the NBA, but people looked at him that way in Serbia too when he first showed up. Yeah. Like, that's, a lot of people felt that way.
Yeah, that's true.
So you also, we had another Serbian do something big in the NBA this week. Darko Rajakovic. Am I saying that right?
Yes, Darko Rajakovic.
He became the new head coach of the Toronto Raptors. You played for Darko on the Serbian national team. He was one of the assistant coaches. What should we know about him? And obviously, this is big. I think the second Serbian head coach, the other being Igor Kokoskov, who is now going to be on your coaching staff in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But, like, what should we know about Darko? What do you know about him?
I know he can make pretty good coffee. That's what I know about Darko. And he's going
That's
to
important.
Bring coffee machine over there for sure. But, yeah, we talked about it. I mean, I'm happy for him. He deserved it. You know, it's hard. People don't understand how hard is it to leave your country, your family, your loved ones to pursue your goals, you know, and dreams in life. And coaches, all of the coaches, they have that, they're like players, you know, they have that drive, basketball drive. And who are really into the coaching, you can see, like, he wants to be the head coach and he's willing to do anything to, you know, he really wants to do it his way. And I'm really proud of Darko because I know how hard is it to build the name and to get a chance to be a head coach. And he knows basketball. You know, you can see that with results with Memphis and Oklahoma before that. And, you know, very experienced, very into it. And the most important thing, he is motivated. I think without motivation, there is nothing else more powerful. You know, so I think he is really motivated about it. And, you know, from first few words that I chat with him.
So when you, over this last 2 months, were you kind of surprised that all these teams were having trouble with the Heat, since you guys with the Hawks just came in there in the play-in tournament, beat them by 11 points on their home court? I think you had 14 points in that game. We're like, what's the problem here? Why is everybody having so much trouble with the Heat? You guys had no problems with them.
I think we had the problems during the regular season. So they were beating us physically, and then we were really like, oh, we're going to play Miami again. Let's fight, you know. And then we really approached that game differently. And, you know, it's a one game. One game doesn't decide anything in playoffs, but it's really important. Every game is important. That playing game, it brings a different mindsets and different. You know, different pressure. It's just one game. And you also, when you're playing that 7-8 seed, you are not getting eliminated. So you have another chance. You have that, all these like things in, you know, in your head. I don't know. I think because they beat us in the regular season, I think there was our just reaction from it. Yeah. And they thought it's going to be easy. So basketball is a lot, you know, psychology game, and how you know, how is your first punch looking, basically.
You mentioned with Nikola Jokic, reserved, quiet. You said even shy when you first met him. That's not the impression I get of his brothers. you watched a game with him in Miami, sat with him. What are those guys like during a game, especially during a finals game?
They are so into the game, man. They're you know, every possession, they're, you know, every basket, they cheer for every guy, you know, and they're really true support, and they're really what brother means. They're really like that, like they're really real brothers to Nicola. Like they're sometimes even like too protective to him, but always for his good, you know. So I know I've been talking with the middle one, Nemanja, mostly, but you know, they're all basically following his career and supporting him and being around him. It's also tough for the family to do that and to thrive to do it and to stay good. You know, it's easy to start to be good, but to stay good during the whole time and to be that supportive and helpful, it means a lot. Because I know I have a sister too, that she does the same job for me, and I think it gets a lot with our culture.
Were people trash talking them?
That's what I was going to say.
Were people trash talking them during that game? They have rave enough to trash talk them during that game?
Yes, but they always react in the Serbian way, and it ends the Serbian way. Like, you know, you raise the hand, you'll see later when we win or something like that, some bad words, and it's okay. You have a good day.
Well, let's talk a little about the Hawks. You had, first off, congratulations. You signed a terrific four-year contract extension in March. You had a very good playoff series against the Celtics, shot the ball really well, even though you guys lost in five games. A very unusual season last year where you had a full coaching change mid-season, where not just an interim coach, but the brand new head coach, Quinn Snyder, comes in. That had to be interesting. I don't know if you've experienced something like that before. What's your impressions of Coach Snyder the first few months you've been working with him?
I know Coach since Utah days. We played a lot against Kings, and when I was playing for Kings, I mean, his career tells everything about what you need to know about him and his dedication for the game. He is definitely one of the most experienced coaches in the league. And what I like about him, he's really demanding, high detailed guy, and really knows how to coach his players. We are all, you know, tough to handle for moments and moments, but he always finds a way to talk and to tell you what is your role and job. And it's hard to get that picture together, you know, and that's what the coaching job is. But sometimes, you know, a lot of things happen and it doesn't go your way. But I'm happy with that little progress that we have at the end, towards the end of the season. It's hard to change anything, and it was hard to even believe that we are going to win a championship with that problems that we have, you know, changing all different stuff. So it wasn't real, I will say. But I think we are in good position for future, you know, and yeah, we know that he signed a 5-year deal, right? So he's going to be here for a long time.
What do you guys, obviously, just a couple of years ago, Bogdan, were in the conference finals, went really deep in the series with Milwaukee. So you guys have made it deep in the playoffs, beat the Sixers during that run, beat the Knicks. What do you think you guys need to do as a group to get back to that kind of level next season and beyond?
He has to do a lot with, you know, accepting your role and being into your role and, you know, just keep on working. A lot of guys, we all work. You know, we're all putting in work every single day, and we are all competitive, and that's the team that really it's full of the guys that like to work, you know, so that's not an issue. I believe that the coach will, you know, do his job and set the roles for the players and be there for us and try to put us in the best, you know, positions that is possibly the best spots on the floor, you know, that we can contribute and be most successful. You know, that's also most important, and, you know, a little bit of luck as always.
Oh, I want to ask you about another one of your Balkan buddies, a former Hawks draft pick, actually, talking about Luka Doncic. I know he's got a ton of respect for you from the Slovenian national team, played against Serbia when he was 17 years old in Eurobasket, right? I see you guys always talking when you play. How have you seen him evolve from that 17-year-old kid playing for the Slovenian national team to you know, now where he's an NBA superstar who's got a lot of weight and pressure on his shoulders.
He's been unbelievable since day one, you know, that he touched the ball. It's just some unique talent and unbelievable talent. You know, I believe that every player had the coaches in career that, you know, that you learn from them and all that. For him, I don't know who taught him all of this, but since day one, I see him, you know, passing, making right plays. It's just the pure talent, you know. I even remember one of my fans when he was like 13 or 14 and I was just started to play. They sent me his videos and they were like, mm-hmm. man, this guy is going to be like next you, they were telling me back then. And I didn't pay attention that much. But then when I saw him playing first game for Real Madrid and the way he played the first game, it was I was like, this guy is going to be even better because his first game was way better than mine. And I was 18 and he's 16, you know. Mm-hmm. So yeah. I was like, no, this guy is unbelievable. Yeah, he is. He is. And the things he's doing is just. It's crazy how everyone thinks it's easy, you know, because he makes it look so easy.
Well, Bogdan, thank you so much for your time. I know you just got back home and good luck later this summer with the Serbian national team in the World Cup. I know you guys got to try to drag Nikola away from the horse track to get him to Manila to play. You guys have a great chance to win.
Hopefully, man.
Whatever you got to do to get him there, we'd love to see him go for a World Cup and an NBA championship in the same year.
Yeah, so. Might need to learn how to, you know, treat the horses nice.
What's the horse racing situation in the Philippines?
Yeah.
But, okay, thanks so much for your time. Good luck, and we'll see you down the road.
All right, thank you.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Well, thanks to Bogdan Bogdanovic for taking some time out. He was really excited about his fellow countrymen winning that championship. He, I'm sure, hopes that someday it's going to be his turn. Mm-hmm. So a lot going on in the NBA. We got a hard pivot here to the offseason because it's boiling. So Adrian Wojnarowski had the story that came out on Wednesday that if the Wizards decide to do a rebuild, let's be honest, the Wizards are probably going to be doing a rebuild. I mean, they may not call it a rebuild. They may retool a retooling, but they had the 10th highest payroll in the league last year and they missed the play-in. And you know, they're sitting there with Kuzma, Kyle Kuzma and Kristaps Porzingis with free agents. I don't know what they're going to do there. But I think they're going to really look hard at trading Bradley Beal. Woj had that story that, that Mark Bartlestein, who's Beal's agent, is going to look at it. That's the way it has to be because Beal has a no trade clause. And as I've been saying on TV for a few days here, well, first off, when last season it, you know, there was this thought in the 2022 trade deadline, there was this thought that maybe Bradley Beal, who was going to be a free agent, might be available. And then it became clear that he was not going to be available because the Wizards had basically decided they were going to give him the max. And that's what Beal wanted. And sure enough, we get to the summer. Beal opts out of his contract to become a free agent and immediately signs a 5-year, $250 million new maximum level contract. I don't think it was a no-brainer to give to pay Bradley Beal, who is a three-time All-Star, that much money.
Right.
But the only way they were going to keep him in Washington was by committing to that. That I understood. Then a day or two later, the other shoe dropped, which is that as part of that deal, which again, not a no-brainer in my opinion to pay him the full 250.
But right.
They obviously came to the decision over the course of discussing it for a while that that contract had a no-trade clause in it.
Which is just insane.
The only one I'm in sorry. The NBA.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but what was the difference between the max they could give him and what he could get on the market?
The answer
like
is a
had
lot.
To throw, like dozens and dozens and dozens of millions of dollars. So you had to throw a no-trade clause to get him to take the deal? No. Like, that's the kind of deal that gets a GM fired. That's what's what happened. Michael
Winger. It's the kind of deal that gets the agent hired. So Mark Bartlestein.
Boy, I mean, it is a phenomenal deal by Mark Bartlestein. Now, you know, Michael Winger's running that along with Will Dawkins, who he brought in from Oklahoma City. And look, the Wizards, if we're being honest, they should have traded Bradley Beal a while ago. This rebuild is long overdue. They've been stuck in purgatory and mediocrity for years now. And so it's long overdue. The problem is because of the contract and especially that no trade clause, Wendy, as you pointed out on TV, getting significant value or you know, you could say fair value for Bradley Beal is going to be extremely difficult when he can veto anything and basically say, I want to go here. And nope, I don't want them to give up that much to get me.
Well, let's set aside the contract for a second. And let's set aside the no trade clause for a second. I think there's a big difference between what people like generally think of Bradley Beal, the player, mm-hmm. and what he is at this point, especially after playing a combined 90 games the past two seasons. I went through and made a list last night of guys I would definitely take in the league over Bradley Beal. I got to 36 guys, and that was without any sort of like debate over maybe this guy or maybe that guy. Like he might not right. be right now a top 50 player in the league. So, or he's a
top 50 player.
Well,
I mean,
crazy. Well, listen, I can go through the list if you want. Like
I don't
the numbers want. Add. Well, there you go. The numbers add up pretty fast.
Yeah.
So the point is you're not only talking about a guy who's owed $200 million that has a no trade clause that's played 90 games the past 2 years.
Right.
You're talking about a guy that I'm not sure is a top 25 or 30 player right now. Now, he could come back next year if he gets traded or just in Washington and play 75 games and score 28 or 30 again and mm-hmm. look great. Like he could bounce back, but we're not talking about a guy. We're not talking about Damian Lillard here, right?
Right.
So you have a player who's seen some shine come off him on top of the contract, on top of the no trade clause. And yeah, like if you look at where this is going to go, the Wizards are not operating from a huge position of strength here, to put it mildly.
What's negative strength?
So yeah. Right.
There's two issues with the no trade clause, just to be clear. One is the fact that obviously he can veto any trade. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it means that he can decide where he's traded and what he's traded for. Those are two. The other thing is the team that acquires him, the no trade clause travels. It's not a one and done. The no trade clause travels. So when you're trading for a guy who's 30 years old, he's going to turn 30 at the end of this month, you're a little bit worried about where the contract will be in 2 years or so. And because it's going to be over $50 million a year. And if you don't like the fit and want to retrade him, now you got the problem. You inherit the same problem.
Right.
Is that, you know, he gets to control it if he doesn't want to go or if he doesn't want to go for a certain package.
Yep.
So that's why the value, I mean, like, I do think Bradley Beal as a player can help a contending team
for
at
sure.
a significant level.
No question.
I just think that, in all honesty, the Wizards getting off of this contract might be the asset that they get in a deal.
Well, this,
right. Also,
this is... go ahead.
I was going to say, also, when you evaluate should a trade happen, which certainly sounds like it will, when you evaluate the return, you have to consider, hey, this is a trade that is launching a rebuild. So the Wizards pick next year is essentially part of the trade return. That pick is top 12 protected, then top 10, then top 8. So if the Wizards are landing in the top five of the draft next year, that's essentially part of the return of the trade.
Well, very well said. And what I was going to say was, after, you know, I was talking to Bobby Marks about this yesterday, went back to when I started covering the league when Bobby's with the Nets. This is essentially when Danny Ferry took over the Atlanta Hawks and traded Joe Johnson to Brooklyn. And in that deal, the Hawks got all expiring contracts. They got one first round pick and they got one swap for Joe Johnson, who had made several All-Star teams at that point, made some couple more with the Nets, and was on a very long-term deal without a no-trade
clause.
Were
stunned at the trade. People were stunned that Danny Ferry would trade their best player basically for expiring contracts when he got there.
And again, I think the idea that a pick and a swap was seen as a good return in a situation where you're, again, talking about a guy without a no-trade clause, I think underscores what the expectation should be if a deal happens here. This is not going to be, as you said yesterday, like the Donovan Mitchell trade or like the Rudy Gobert trade or like these other trades where you've seen picks flying around, or like if Damian Lillard potentially gets traded. All those situations are far different than the one this one looks at. And the other thing that matters with this too is you've got Kyle Kuzma and Kristaps Porzingis sitting there with player options for this summer. Two of the more interesting free agents on the market. Porzingis, under the radar, had a really, really good season, I thought, for Washington this year. Kuzma's played well for the Wizards as a wing player in a league where everybody's looking for wings. So those are a couple other pivot points here too, if you're Michael Winger and Will Dawkins.
I think they should be signing them. Where are you going with those guys? I think they should resign them.
Why? If they are a hitting reset, if they're looking to trade Beal, if we're talking about a full-fledged rebuild, why re-sign veterans?
Here's why. Well, first off, it depends on, you have to get a contract that you can trade. You know, you're signing them to maintain them as assets. And the other thing is, you're compelled to spend. The new rules require you. What is it, Bontemps? You're on top of this.
You have to spend up to, I believe, 90% of the, I think you have to spend up to 90% of the cap by the first day of the regular season.
Yeah. So you got to spend your money on something.
The days of hoarding your set cap space, like the Spurs and the Pacers and teams coming into this season did, are over. Can't do that.
Yeah. So, first off, there's not a ton of cap space out there in general.
Right.
So you're obviously, Kuzma is going to be in demand. He may not want to stay, but if you can re-sign them, you may want to do so.
Or do sign and trades either way. Sign and trades. Work with them to get assets back, or keep them and be able to have the option to turn them into assets later, for sure.
Agreed. Okay, so let's talk about where Beal could end up.
Hold on, I do just want to real quick say, obviously Kuzma at $13 million, he will get more than that. That's his player option.
That's right.
Porzingis at 36 is going to be interesting. I don't think it's a no-brainer for him to opt out now that there's been a change in regime in Washington and there's not like a, you know, the guarantee of another deal coming there. So that'll be interesting to see. Point.
It would feel like if he opts out, he's got a pretty good idea that he's getting a long-term deal either there or somewhere else, right? Because to your point, that's one of those, the Kuzma one's obvious. He's going to get more money. Like you said,
well, Porzingis, he could also opt in and extend off that deal.
Right, but the good chance you probably hear about that at the same time. That's why his option, to Tim's point, his option decision is a very interesting one to monitor, because if he does opt out, you probably would assume he's got something lined up once we get to June 30th.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about where Beal could end up. So instantaneously, I've been speaking and writing about for a couple of weeks now about how I think the Heat are in play. Mm-hmm. The reason that I think the Heat are going to go now is that, number one, with where Jimmy Butler is in his career, your window with this core is narrowing. Two, the Heat have a little bit of flexibility because Bam Adebayo is on the quote unquote fun max. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard for a team that's going to be able to swallow three big contracts under the new rules, but they have a little bit of a window while Adebayo is still on that contract where they could take this. And the thing about the Heat is that they routinely over the decades have been able to develop low dollar players. So if there's a team that's going to be top heavy salary wise, it's going to be the Heat. Now they have Kyle Lowry sitting there at $30 million on the last year of his contract. They would love to figure out a way to get off of that. So they're facing a little bit of a crunch But I think for a 2 to 3 year window, I think they could squeeze Beal. And also,
they also signed Tyler Hero last fall, so they'd be able to move him starting July 1st, which is a factor also.
And his number next year is $27 million.
So Hero and Duncan Robinson would be the two guys that I would think would be the players swapped in such a trade. I would ask for Caleb Martin if I were the Wizards, but again, Bradley Beal gets to decide whether Caleb Martin would be in that deal, quite frankly. And the Heat would be very thin at power. Caleb Martin isn't a classic power forward. The Heat don't have a classic power forward. That's part of the issue. They play
Caleb trading Martin, him would make him very small, though. They're already small to make him even smaller.
Right. Right. So, but you know, that's the thing. Like, if you're a Wizards fan, I'm sorry to tell you this. Like, you pretty much have to put the trade machine down.
Yeah.
You can do it for fun, but it's just, it's not going to be enjoyable for you.
Well, here's the real question. Who is the other team besides Miami that makes sense?
So
set aside where he would want to go. Just who makes sense?
Okay. So Milwaukee has been linked to him, but I don't see how they do it.
No,
it doesn't make sense. Again, it's Chris Middle. Well, let's just pretend, right? This is all pretend. Disclaimers here. The only way that really makes sense is if, say, Chris Middleton opts in and he's in a deal to Washington. Why does that make any sense for Washington?
Right. Then you're talking about you got to get a third team involved. That's because if you're rebuilding, why do you want, you know?
And what does Brian say about three team trades?
Zero team trades. Zero team trades.
So obviously they happen, but we're talking about a three team potential sign and trade.
Yeesh, that's tough.
I mean,
it seems extremely unlikely.
I know that Giannis has, you know, had a love. The idea of Bradley Beal has appealed to Giannis in the past. I think if you're Bradley Beal, you look at the opportunity to go to Milwaukee, you'd love that opportunity. But I don't see how it structurally happens with what the Bucks already have on their roster and their commitments.
It'd be a very difficult thing to pull off.
Hey, the Mavs would love to get Chris Middleton. Can they interest the Wizards in taking back Davis Bertans?
No, they cannot. No, they cannot. So look, there's smart people here. Let me tell you who's one of the smartest guys I've ever met. I've known Michael Winger for 18 years. The man is extremely shrewd. He also holds his cards very close to the vest. Mm-hmm. He has thought about this a lot. Trust me. He also, I remember when he got hired as the general manager of the Clippers, he came from the Oklahoma City Thunder. He got hired late in the summer after the Clippers had signed Blake Griffin to that 5-year deal. And one of the things that he said when he got the job was like, we got to get rid of Blake Griffin. And I mean, it wasn't just him, you know, and at the end of the day, Lawrence Frank was a part of that decision and Steve Ballmer was a part of the decision. But within 6 months of Michael Winger getting to the Clippers, he had negotiated the deal that brought Tobias Harris was the central part of that. And that wasn't a rebuild trade. That was like a two-step trade. They were going to make two steps, but that's what this Beal trade is going to be. I think they're going to, if they trade for Hero and Robinson, as an example, I'm not sure that those guys are going to be Wizards for 5 years.
But those are guys they can play and put up numbers and turn around for more stuff later, much like this old boss Sam
without no trade clauses in their contracts. Right.
I'm just spitballing here. I don't know if there's interest on either side, but a team that I think could make a reasonable offer and still remain extremely competitive would be the Knicks. You know, obviously that's a team that's got a ton of picks moving forward, including that protected pick that the Wizards owe is actually, it's bounced around, but it's the Knicks property at this point. You know, they can make salaries match. Like if the sides were motivated, I think there could be a deal to be made there.
I think the challenge with the Knicks is Bradley Beal the guy you want to get aggressive for? Now, the thing about this is that, again, this isn't trade 3-4 first round picks. The price of Bradley Beal, if he wants to go to your team, could be the big factor here. The Knicks could potentially make a Bradley Beal trade,
right,
and not dramatically harm their asset base that if they want to go out and make a bigger
or basically harm it at all.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking is because the Wizards would be motivated to move off Beal's contract and enter a rebuild, that there might be a, you know, what would be considered a low cost trade to be made there for the Knicks, where they would still have ammo moving forward.
Significant salary back,
right?
Because Beal makes $47 million.
They could do Evan Fournier and then make Derrick Rose's deal guaranteed and do him and then throw in one other salary, and it could basically work. I mean, there are ways they could do it for a fairly low asset price, but you're also then talking about a team that has designs on, you know, like you said, making a lot of moves down the road. And then you're talking about, even if Bradley Beal is really good, there's a gigantic number on your books going forward you have to navigate around. That's right.
Right. Like, what if player X, who happens to be a all NBA player, becomes available in 6 months and you want to trade Bradley Beal for him? Bradley Beal's like, well, I don't want to, I don't want to go to City Y. But it's a good point though, McMahon, because about the draft pick that the Knicks own. I did not actually know that. You educated me. Thank you.
Yeah. That thing has gone from Washington to Houston in the Walrus trade to Oklahoma City when Houston got Shingun. And then last year,
the draft trade at the draft,
to New York.
So that, the reason that's important is because it's got so many years of protection, it really encumbers the Wizards from operating with their draft picks. I don't think they're entering a phase where they want to trade their picks, but they don't have access to all their picks because it's got this protection over so many years. Getting their pick back is pretty attractive. Although if you're the Knicks, you're like, well, you're entering a rebuild. We're actually going to hold on to that pick.
It's 12, 10, 8. I would say of the Knicks picks, I don't know where you would rank that one in terms of value.
I'd say it's probably the worst one.
Well, you know, other than their own picks.
I was going to say their own picks. You never say never, but.
Well, but I don't. There's I think there's a decent chance the Knicks won't ever get the pick is why I say that.
Right. Well, right. Well, that's true. But the Knicks, there's a reason why the Knicks sent their own first round pick for Josh Hart and all their portfolio picks.
Right.
Hey, are the Knicks going to get that Mavs pick ever? Top 10 protected again next year.
I would just expect them to get it next year, but it's a good point.
Them's fighting words. Yeah, the Knicks have like 12 tradable first round picks, and they don't have a pick in this year's draft.
Okay. To me, the overall point though is that this is not outside of Miami, which is a makes sense on a lot of levels. I don't see an obvious second team.
Yeah.
And that's why if I'm the Washington Wizards, I am really rooting for the Portland Trailblazers to do something with the third pick besides draft a young player. Because I think Damian Lillard also, we'll get to him, there's one place that it makes sense from an asset and fit standpoint, at least somewhat, to get a deal done. And there's one place for Bradley Beal. And it's sort of hard to find a second for both of them. And it's
Dame's found a second. Dame likes Brooklyn. He's made that very clear.
Wow.
All right. So let me just real quick. There's been some discussion about Philadelphia. There's a relationship there between Beal and Embiid. The Philadelphia thing. First off, Philadelphia can't do anything until they know what Harden's going to do. Maybe they do, and they're not saying. I don't know what the answer is. So, secondly, swallowing $47 million, even if Harden leaves, is not simple. They would have to send back
Tobias Harris.
Tobias Harris is probably what they'd have to do.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're talking about, again, some crazy complicated James Harden gets signed and traded elsewhere, then there's a salary exception, then you take in Beal. Again,
if anybody pulls off crazy complicated, it's Daryl Morey.
True.
You're right. True. I'm not going to rule Philadelphia out, but until I see what happens with Harden, I'm not sure that they're in position to do anything. Well, they can't actually, it's going to be almost impossible for them to actually do it until July, but they're on the board, but I don't think it's at the center of the board.
Nostra Perks got Harden on the Lakers.
Yes, I saw that. I asked if I could pour liquid nitrogen over that take today on television.
What were you told?
We've got Jay Williams saying that Beal should get traded to the Warriors. The Warriors are facing a $400 million payroll, and every single rule is made to crush them.
Don't like him to say he doesn't care, though. The hell with the rules.
Sure. We win. What did he say? This team wins.
Yeah, okay.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Yeah. Okay. All right. Zion Williamson. It's surprising to me how out there it is in the league that the Pelicans are discussing Zion business. I want to be very careful about the word offer because that word is a dangerous word. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that the Pelicans have offered Zion to anybody, but every day that passes for the last 5 or 6 days, I hear a different discussion that the Pelicans have had that implies that they're going to make Zion available and that him or Brandon Ingram. And I mean, I wouldn't rule out anything, I guess, but the events of the last 6 months with Zion are what they are.
Really over the course of his career. Like,
yeah.
You know, 28 games a season.
And when he's on the floor, he's spectacular, but he ain't on the floor very often.
There's
baggage.
We're entering into this time when there's so much misdirection and smokescreens. Mm-hmm. I am very wary of being made a tool or a fool. And it happens to the best of us. It will probably happen to me in the next week. So I'm very wary, but it is extraordinarily out there about how much the Pelicans are interested in Scoot Henderson, to the point where I'm like, how is this out there so hard?
Right.
Unless the Pelicans want it out there. So I'm nervous about even giving that attention, but it is there. And Charlotte and Portland both have fascinating decisions. Charlotte has maybe the biggest decision in the draft between Brandon Miller and Scoot Henderson, and they're working very hard on it. Different people are speculating different things every day that I talk to. Jonathan Givony, in his mock that came out on Tuesday, had Miller there, but I got people in the league thinking it's going to be Henderson, and which is probably the way Charlotte wants it. Right. Charlotte recently dispatched a whole bunch of people to Tuscaloosa to investigate and vet the situation with Brandon Miller. They had Scoot Henderson in and Brandon Miller in the last few days. I think I heard they're going to bring them both back in again for Michael Jordan. There's also the fact that Jordan is in negotiations to sell the team to one of the limited partners, Gabe Plotkin and a group. And I think there's a decent chance that's going to get done, but I don't know if it's going to get done in time to who makes a decision on the draft pick. And so that's a whole thing that everybody's trying to figure out. And you got New Orleans there. And then you got Portland, who is actively trying to trade the number 3 pick to support Dame Lillard. And I mean, actively, like they are in this, right. I don't know if they're going to get something done. So there's a really uncertainty that happens at 2 and 3. If you ask me, I suspect that there's not going to be a trade and Charlotte will pick 2 and the Blazers will have to pick 3. But the Zion thing is there. And at the very least, it is very clear that the Pelicans' thought on Zion Williamson's future with the team is evolving. That's right. Me putting it mildly.
And if you look at that, like, so our editors, we're going to have like one of these fake trade or trade proposal type of pieces. They asked me to put one together. And so I ended up doing the Charlotte one. And I'm looking at this. And, you know, Gordon Hayward, expiring contract, that salary matches. But I'm like, dude, Zion for the number 2 overall pick, essentially Zion for Scoot. Like, I've got to throw in an extra pick from the Pelicans here, don't I? And honestly, if I'm Charlotte, I'm saying, sure, we'll swap picks with you in this draft and then do that. If I'm New Orleans, I'm like, no. Here's Milwaukee's 2025. But I think Zion's value is taken on enough water to where this guy who when he's drafted, you're thinking he's the next generational superstar. I don't think you can trade him essentially straight up for a number two overall pick right now.
It's also a reminder, as we're a week away from the draft, that while I think Victor Wembanyama is going to be a tremendous player, 4 years ago, we were talking about Zion Williamson being the guy that was going to be the face of the league for the next decade, right? Just to say that we have no idea how these things are going to play out over time. And we're now 4 years into Zion's career. He's played 114 games, and we're talking about him potentially being traded elsewhere. But, I mean, to your point, McMahon, it is a very complicated thing to try to suss out what his value is, because when he does play, he's really damn good, but he doesn't play very often. There's obviously going to be injury questions about him going forward based off how little he's played. And frankly, if you're looking at it as another team and New Orleans is looking to trade this guy right now, then you, I think, very rationally have to look at it and say, well, are they doing this because they think that this is only going to stay in the same place going forward, where he's only going to be able to play a handful of games a year and not be available, setting aside everything else?
So well, Embiid, Joel Embiid high played 94 games.
Is tough.
Joel Embiid played 94 games his first 4 years too.
I don't think that's a very comparable situation.
I he agree it's not comparable, but it's a reminder. It's a reminder that 4 years doesn't make a career.
No, I think it is. I think there is some comps there, because Embiid also early in his career had weight and conditioning concerns. So look, Zion, the concerns are obvious, but I agree with Wendy in that you can't just say, well, this is the way it's always going to be. I don't think you can say there's no hope. But the other concerns with Zion is there's a lot of, like, there's just too much drama and maintenance that comes along.
Well, there's no relationship between Zion and the organization, and minimal relationship between Zion and his teammates, from what I understand.
Which is so that's bothersome.
That's worrisome if you're going to pull out of this. But I will say this, Zion thrived at Duke, and he only got hurt because the shoe broke. And if you're looking for a pathway, you say, well, let's go see what worked at Duke and see if we can replicate that. And, you know, maybe it's making them go to class because, you know, I mean, I'm joking, but I'm only half joking.
Maybe it's making him actually work with the team's player development staff and you know, somehow convincing a stepfather that the professionals can take it from here.
All right. So monitor that. I don't know if he's going to get traded. I do know that he's in discussions. That's best I can say. Before we go, let's talk about Dame Lillard. One of the things I want to talk about is the Heat concept that Lillard, if he's not, you know, I don't like the word satisfied because it makes it sound like, you know, he's, I don't like the way it sounds, but if he doesn't like the outlook of the Blazers' improvement through the draft and free agency, that he may revisit his position. As of now, and again, as of now, afternoon on Thursday, I have the only indications I have are that the Blazers are trying to trade pieces to support Dame, and that Dame is totally committed to them. We can revisit this in an hour, a week, a month, 5 months, I don't know. But that's what they're looking for. Now, the Miami Heat, in my view, Dame is a better fit for the Heat than Beal is. And if Dame becomes available in 2 weeks, then the Heat, I think, would be better off going for Dame. But I'm going to tell you that I don't think the Heat can win a bidding war for Dame Lillard.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because, again, I'm not sure there are a ton of obvious fits for Dame in a trade. I think, again, we're talking about a massive contract, talking about a guy in his mid-30s. Guy's a tremendous player, Superman. but is a small guard, and there's a lot of concerns about that. So you have all those factors. 33 years old. You have all those factors. But to me, this goes back to our mantra on the pod, which is actions over words, and let's see where this thing sits a week from now, when Portland's on the clock with the third pick, and either Portland is going to make a trade with that pick and get help for Dame, or if they don't, the questions are immediately going to come about what's happening now. Because what I don't think they can do is middle this and draft Scoot Henderson and have Dame and Scoot or Brandon Miller and have Dame and Brandon Miller and Shaden Sharp and Anthony Simons.
I mean, Scoot Henderson doesn't work at all with what they've got on their roster.
Well, either way, it doesn't matter. Name the young player. The point is, I don't think them just going in perpetuity with young players and Dame is going to be acceptable for everybody involved for an indefinite period of time. So it feels like one way or another, we're at a crossroads. And just like the Wizards became at a crossroads because they hired a new GM, feels like this moment right here for Portland is where the crossroads are reached. And then we see what direction they choose to go.
Yeah, we'll have to see how we'll have to see. I mean, Portland is trying some pretty aggressive moves from what I've been able to glean. I have no idea how accurate everything is, but they are swinging. And the thing about it is that they're actually primed to rebuild. Like they had the eighth pick last year, Shaedon Sharpe. I think he was the eighth pick.
Seven.
I got the third. Was he 10th?
Seven.
Oh, seven. This year they have the three pick. You know, if they wanted to, like they're primed, they could get a haul for Dame, whatever it is, and they could have two lottery picks to rebuild around. But that is not the direction that they're going at all. That is not the intel that I'm having at all. If that's being considered, it's not being discussed outside the family.
Well, let's see where it's at in a week. Like you said, this is a definitional actions over words situation. Let's see what the action is.
His words have been pretty clear. It was clear on the exit interview, and it was clear when he was on with Brian Custer. I forget the exact name of the pod or the program. And, you know, he's asked, what do you think about potential trade destinations? And he threw Miami and Brooklyn out there very enthusiastically.
Well, to be slightly fair to Dame, Brian threw out four teams and he picked two of them. But
right. Damian Lillard is an NBA veteran
who 100%
savvy with the media as anybody. And if he just wanted to say, hey, 10 toes down in Portland, you can throw out all the teams. League, I don't want to talk about it.
He's been going on a media tour all summer talking around the idea of being traded. Mm-hmm. So again, I think this comes down to next Thursday and whether there's a player or players on the board that Portland can get that they feel good about. If they could do that, then I think everybody will be happy in Portland with Damon, whoever they get. They'll have him in Portland and we'll see what happens. But if they end up drafting a player and they keep him, you know, there's a very obvious question that then comes next, which is what happens now.
Especially if that player is a point guard.
Yeah.
You know, and then you're talking about their young core is a point guard, a small two guard, and kind of a, I'll say Sharpe's a 2-3.
Well, they don't really, yeah, one of the big issues is they can't defend and they don't have great size. So Scoot Henderson might end up being an MVP, but he isn't known for his size, isn't there with Dame. So we're going to have some more podcasts before the draft, but I'm just going to tell you guys, like, maybe my memory is fading, which is possible. I'm in my mid-40s. I don't remember there being this much potential picks in the top 10 openly available. I haven't heard Charlotte's interested in trade. We know that Portland is interested in trade. There's obviously Houston has been out there. Detroit has been out there. The Magic have the 6th and 11th picks. They want to package and move up if they can. I doubt they'll be able to, but they're interested. Indiana has been talking about people about the 7th pick. I've been told they've been trying to get wing players. They've been trying to move out of the 7th pick to get a high-level wing player now, which, frankly, they might be able to if they're motivated enough. Washington is at 8. We just talked about how we have no idea really Washington's going to do. Utah is at 9. I feel like they'll keep and draft. That's the only one that I don't really have any
I'm action. I'm not sure because Utah's at 9, I believe 16 and 28. I could see – I think Utah is going to explore every opportunity. Plus, they have cap space, which, you know, can make trading a lot easier. I think Utah is going to explore a lot of different things. They might just stay pat, but I think they'll figure out what their options are moving up or moving down.
Yeah, I think the bidding war to move up is going to be hard. Mm-hmm. There's a lot,
We know Dallas is doing stuff at 10. We're trying.
Yeah, Dallas at 10. Mm-hmm. We know they're active trying to help that roster now. You got Orlando at 11. I just said 6 and 11. At 12, you got Oklahoma City. You know Oklahoma City wants to move up. They got to do something with these picks. If they can move up, they can. Last year, you remember, Oklahoma City traded for an extra lottery pick. So, you know Oklahoma's sniffing around. 14 is New Orleans. Where do we start with that? So my instinct actually tells me that almost nothing happens. Like, you know, there will probably be at least one pick go. But there's so much competition for it. And so much is muddled. And there's so much difficulty hashing it all out. We'll talk about how it's going to be a crazy lottery and then everybody picks. That's what I've seen in the past when there's been talk about more than one pick, but it's very active and we'll be talking about it and there'll be obviously developments in the coming days. So thank you to Bogdan. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. Thank you to Mr. Bontemps and Mr. McMahon. Thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast.
Adios, amigos.
Real quick, what's the easiest choice you can make? Window seat over middle? Taco Tuesday over salad? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/hoop, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/hoop now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/hoop.